Didn't I not say Tom Cruise?
Tom Hanks.
I might have said Tom Hanks.
Yeah. I mean, I'll...
You know how they look exactly the same?
Sean right now is saying, Naomi!
Love my name being said like a curse word. Anyways, she flights at first, and then she fights. Because most people, I feel like, have two of those things at least. So she freaks out, drinks, uh-huh. and then she runs downstairs into the lunchroom.
She is coming down the stairs with a sword, and Paco says, no, 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 this is just for decoration, and takes it from her.
Right. And she runs over, and she gets, like, sits at her daughter's lap and, like, holds up a fork, and she's like, you! Mm-hmm. And
right.
She is incomprehensible. Like, she's not getting anything across. And they're like, the dad's like, we just got here and you started drinking already?
We got you an enchilada. And like Charlie holds up the enchilada, and that's when she attacks him and, like, just goes full force.
If you want to edit this back and forth, it's friend, fight, flight, freeze, and flop.
You know what you should never do to a flightless bird? Put them into a fight or flight response. Because they're flightless. They're just going to fight you back. Yeah.
That joke had the feather touch.
Baby Yoda. Definitely. That was his go-to. Fight.
Yeah.
That was our parrot from back in the day, not Baby Yoda from the show.
I mean, Baby Yoda from the show also kind of goes into a fight response.
Yeah.
He rarely, like, just freezes.
Yeah. How do they... Okay. So they get her to bed and a doctor shows up. Or the doctor's there because we cut to, right? Mm-hmm. And he's all like, the accents. That now, I don't have an accent, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, I sound like I'm from the Pacific Northwest, which is fine because I am. But in terms of, like, speaking a second language, having an accent, I don't have one.
Right.
So I don't know how I would feel if someone made fun of me for having one. But I don't assume I would feel great about it. So every time, like, one of these Spanish-speaking persons comes on and has, like, a real thick accent, I'm like, I don't know how I'm supposed to feel about this.
Mm-hmm.
So when he's saying things like, Mr. Dick, whatever his name is, actually, yeah. Like, I gave your wife a very, very strong sedative, mm-hmm. a mucho strong sedative.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds weird when it hits my ears.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I'm just being, like, super sensitive.
It does feel like the accent itself is a little bit forced.
Yeah. Like, there was a Nal Kumjiani. Jen, say his actual name.
Kumail Nanjiani. Yeah. Kumail Nanjiani.
Yeah. Kumail Nanjiani. He was on, I forget what I was watching. It might have been a TikTok or something, but he was talking about how people would ask him to, like, Indian it up, mm-hmm. you know, like Middle Eastern it up.
Right. There's, like, a specific term. I feel like if I say it, it might, I think it's, but I feel like I'm going to butcher this. So anybody who knows the actual term, feel free to let us know in the comments and, you know, engage in that algorithm for all of the podcasts. Never mind. Sorry. I that up.
No. Okay, it's okay. What is the word?
I think it's called patanking. It's like a specifically, like, Indian actors who have an American accent, who can do an Indian accent, will go ahead and play up the Indian side of it. And it's something that Hollywood producers are like expect them to do.
Yeah. Could you be more Asian? Could you talk more black? Like, it's problematic. And so, like, I don't know where that is with these people because, you know, they were in the film. They chose to be in the film.
Yeah, but it's hard to know. It's hard to know if they just kind of, if they were expected to do this.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, and that was kind of what was so surprising about Terry earlier in the film is because she was a black woman, but she wasn't, like, doing, you know, the common sassy black woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was still very professional. It felt very realistic as far as, like, if I was sitting in a seat and I was, like, guy was bribing a flight attendant, I feel like that's what the flight attendant would have said.
Yeah.
And it didn't feel played up.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, maybe we're just taking a movie called Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag too seriously, but it's like,
this is the thing, like this movie, and we'll get into it a little bit, but like it very much feels like a lot of yakety sacks.
Mm-hmm. And so it's like, it's trying to tell you, you're not supposed to take it seriously, but like,
that's our whole thing, analyzing something.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of why we have the podcast. Also, like, the decisions that we make are never in a vacuum, and we should be conscious of when we are expecting people to play up tropes that can be seen, that can have harmful impacts on groups overall.
Agreed. But this Mexican doctor does make house calls, so I respect that in 1997.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but now let's cut to a frat house.
Right. So we see Joe Pesci going into the frat house. He goes up. He must break into the frat house, but he goes and he sees Charlie Pritchett's face, and then he's like, oh, it's that guy. And so he goes into a room and he pulls a gun on a guy who's sleeping.
Yeah, that guy's name is Steve.
Yeah, that's not the guy who was on the phone.
But he thinks he is.
Yeah, Joe Pesci doesn't know that. And then David Spade walks in.
Yes, and he's like, hey, do you got notes on? He sees them. He goes, oh, I didn't need them. And he turns around, he walks away.
Yeah, and Joe Pesci points him to come over.
And he's like, ah, Escobar, I know who you are. You know, like, his one-liners are pretty good. Spade, again, he just does them pretty good.
Right, and the thing with the scenes is that it cuts between everything going on at the hotel versus everything that is going on. And by the way, Joe Pesci is at a dorm room on the East Coast, and it looks like very much like it's night. But when you go over to, like, but they're in Mexico.
That's not much of a time difference.
No, it's like 3 hours. So how is it nighttime on the East Coast, but it's still like noon? Because like it would be afternoon. So it like they're about to end lunch. So it's like 3 o'clock, maybe at the latest.
Yeah.
So let's say it's 3 o'clock when mom has her freak out. On the East Coast, that's only 6 o'clock. Even in the dead of, I mean, like, unless you're in the dead of winter, it's not going to be nighttime.
Right. And it certainly doesn't look like it's a summer vacation sort of situation.
I think they specifically say it's spring break.
Oh, so we're talking about April.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure like it would not be that dark at 6 o'clock at night.
But in Mexico, they choose to sedate a drunk woman who's already taken a handful of woozy pills.
Mm-hmm.
So Dick is like, do you want to go with me to
rent a boat?
And he's like, oh, sure. Cause he wants to bond with his practically father-in-law. And then the mom sits up and she goes, is my hair okay? And then she passes back out. And I'm like, huh?
Yeah.
And the daughter's like, see, she'll be fine. She was just messed up or whatever.
Right.
So Miracle Whip has to go to his room to change his shirt.
And Dad goes with him to make a phone call because he doesn't want to wake his wife.
Yes. He's got to call his mom.
Which is pretty considerate. You know, he doesn't want to potentially wake her up, you know, cause more havoc and everything.
We cut back to the dorm room and Pesci's like, we're going to play a game of be honest with me.
I call this scene wet towel interrogation, because he brings like a fishbowl and he gets a towel and he puts part of it into the fishbowl, wrings it out.
I am not okay. Like whenever I watch America's Funniest Home Videos, which is a favorite of mine for years, I always like physically recoil when people look like they're in pain. So I don't like it when people get hit with a bat when they're swinging at the pinata, or they fall on the balance beam and they clock themselves straddling that beam. Like, I just feel bad for them. I don't necessarily think it's funny. But I have to tell you that as Pesci is taking nut shots at these guys with the wet towel, it was awesome. Because I knew it was kind of fake, but also I'm really good at whipping towels at people. It hurts.
Yeah.
And I used to do it in high school. I would take a shower after PE and I would whip people with, not like all the time.
Yeah.
I wasn't like the bully of, I might have been the bully of the locker room, but I was like, whap. Because all of my childhood and well into my adulthood, I thought TV was telling me how things were.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not.
Sometimes I will instinctually laugh if someone like pratfalls.
Mm-hmm.
And like in America's Funniest Home Videos, when they're getting hurt. And then like there were plenty of times where I would just sort of like chortle. And I don't know why. Like seeing
Schadenfreude.
Yeah. Like I know when I fall down, I just sort of want to lay there in embarrassment and pain. And I'm not physically hurt. But like emotionally, I'm hurt.
Yeah, that's what butt hurt is.
Yeah. And these guys are getting butt hurt by a towel. No, never mind.
They're getting nut hurt.
Nut hurt by a towel. Anyways. And then we cut back to Charlie opening up his bag with his dad, with his with Lori's dad in the room and he's making a phone call. His back's to...
Conveniently, he goes behind him.
Yeah.
While the dad's on the phone with his mom trying to convince her not to come out to the resort.
Right. And so he opens up the bag. He empties out the contents of the bag and it's just head. And then he picks up...
They're all wrapped.
They're wrapped. And he picks up one and he opens it up because he's like, this isn't my stuff. And then he sees the dead head. He sees the head and everything and he freaks out. And he drops it, so it's
Dad's like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Ants. And he's like, Mom, you can't come here. There are ants.
Yeah.
And then
He goes to check it again, and he freaks out again.
What did he say the second time?
He's just, like, the first time he opens up the bag, and he sees the dead head, and he freaks out, and he drops it. And then he goes, and he picks it up again, and I think he, like, pulls it out of the bag, and it's the sudden realization. He's still like, ah! And he's like, oh, I got a leg cramp. That's
leg cramp. And he's like, yeah. Oh, well, keep it down. I'm talking to my mom or whatever. And so the dick is getting more and more upset. And then he angrily gets off the phone and he looks at all of these bags littered over the bed and he goes, hey, don't send off that laundry. It'll cost me a fortune. And he just leaves the room. And I'm like, I've never had like a ball shaped plastic coated lump of laundry that I brought on vacation.
Yeah.
So the assumption of that is just wild.
Yeah. My note goes, what a way to find out you're connected to a murder.
This is what I've entitled, another case of just call the cops.
Right. But he can't because later out we find out why he thinks he can't call the local authorities.
Racist.
Mm-hmm. So Charlie freaks out. And then Lori comes in because she hears him screaming and he's like, what's up? What's up? What's going on? And he tells her that there are 8 heads in.
She thinks it's a present first.
Yeah.
And so she's like, you brought me something? And so she goes and opens it, finds a head, screams.
Yeah.
And the guys come in and Pepe comes in.
Well, first she faints and then...
with her eyes open. The head hits the floor. She hits the floor and turns towards camera.
Yeah. But I'm pretty sure her eyes are closed when she turns towards the camera.
Nope.
No?
No, her eyes are wide open.
Okay.
And I noticed it because it was supposed to mimic the eyes of the head that hit the floor. Bag before her, which is funny because the eyes were open when mom opened the bag and looked inside. Mm-hmm. One of the bags had cracked open or whatever, and she opened it and the eyes were open. And then when the head falls to the floor, this part, the eyes are open on one of the heads. And then for the rest of the film, except for one particular part, the eyes are closed on all of them for the rest of the film. And I wonder who's like...
Yeah, because they'd already reached the Southern Oracle.
If you'd like to notice that, if you'd like to confront that reference, we did a Neverending Story a couple years ago, and it's a real good episode.
And we refer to it almost every single episode.
Yeah, I really do. Because I'm not afraid anymore! And I think he's not afraid anymore because he makes a joke.
Tell me you're connected to a homicide without telling me you're connected to a homicide.
She asks how many there are, and he's like, oh, there's like 8 of them. And I'm like, does the number of heads matter at this point? You just need to make a phone call.
No. So after Lori faints, she screams and then faints. And that's when Paco and the other bellboy come into their room. And Charlie gets the bright idea to just cover his hand over her mouth to stop her from talking.
He physically restrains her and then covers her mouth.
And he gives a bullshit reason. It's like so when he first discovers the heads, he gives the first reason of ants being everywhere. And then there's a cramp in his leg. And then when the dad left, he sees the head again and he yells. And that's when Paco comes in.
I
ate a hot pepper. And the dog's like trying to get one of the heads in a bag.
Uh-huh. Pepe's the only one who makes sense.
Right. And then Lori comes in. She has her big freak out. And then she screams.
She ate a hot pepper too.
But he has his hand over her mouth. And Paco does nothing. These guys do nothing. And it was at this point, my notes go, well, this got dark way after the dead body scene.
At the very least, you're witnessing an assault.
Right. Like there is something extremely suspicious about it. And be like, oh, OK, how about we just go ahead and, you know, stay in here? Like if I heard a woman scream, go into the room where she's screaming and a guy literally has a hand over her mouth, I'm going to be like, no, I'm not going to leave until you let her go.
Yeah, let her talk for herself. I just remembered what the joke was that he made, by the way.
What was that?
She screams and runs into the closet.
Oh, yeah. And he says, oh, you can't run in there because that's where the dead bodies are.
Yeah, that's where the rest of the bodies are.
This woman had misgivings about him. And honestly, if I was in her position, this moment would have solidified why I should not be with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because even with how everything plays out in the end, he still made a joke about the dead bodies in the closet.
Yeah.
That's you clicking the pen, right?
Yeah.
Oh, let's cut back to an arguably funnier scene where the hostages are in gravity boots and they're swinging and screaming.
Right, because everything going on with Charlie in the hotel is getting intermixed, or is getting cut by the interrogation scene of his roommates. And at one point, Lori's like, do you think that this is a prank from Steve and Ernie? Because we find out David Spade's character's name is Ernie. And then in my notes, I was like, hey, name's not Ernie. It's Ice.
And if you'd like to catch that reference, go back one episode from here and it's Hocus Pocus.
Right. But Charlie says, no, it's not really Ernie's style. And Steve doesn't like blood. And that's when he also says like, oh, yeah, they don't get into these kind of shenanigans. And that's when it cuts to them getting interrogated with like swinging, which like I don't see how that's interrogating.
Well, after being hung upside down for a while, all the blood does rush to your head. And okay. you start to experience. You can die from it. So like you're not supposed to hang upside down for long periods of time. So if they are upside down and they're scared and they're being threatened with a gun, like this is obviously a substantial torture method. Mm-hmm. But when we come back to Miracle Whip's room, he's like, Lori's like, let's call the cops. And he's all like, we can't do that. We're in Mexico. The police are corrupt and they're going to turn me into a taco.
Yeah.
And that is Jen doing an audio performance of My Soul when I heard that joke.
Right.
Because it's tasteless, I think is what it is.
Right.
Madeline, I'm so sorry.
I can see why, like fear of the cops is true for certain people in our society. White men are not the ones who are concerned with it.
Moneyed white men. Yeah.
Yeah.
The dad's got monies. Mm-hmm. This dude is a frat boy.
Yeah.
So he's got money.
He
more likely than not.
Yeah.
Especially because he's been in college forever. They mentioned that, I think, earlier. They're like, you switched majors. And then they list like five or six things that he had. No, almost. We're almost there.
Mm-hmm.
This happens in just a little bit. But like, actually, no, it has happened already, I think.
It was, yeah, it was before the mom came down.
No, it was after the mom came down. Because here's the thing. They put her to bed or whatever. The whole thing happens with Lori. Oh, hold on a second.
It
happens in just a second. Dude is rude to the hotel worker who is being a little too helpful. Then he locks the door. He's rude to the maid. He's all like, no clean, no clean, no clean. And then he like shuts the door with her on the other side. He finds where he's going to hide the bag because he's supposed to go meet his dad.
Well, I have a note that says Charlie's solution, throw them away. So I think,
that happens already?
Do you remember the?
Yeah, that's what I mean by rude to the coworker. Okay,
yeah,
Lori's
like, if you don't want to call the police, what's your solution? He's like, we'll just throw them away. And then it cuts to him like trying to throw them away in the garbage, but he has this exchange with Paco.
Yeah, he's like, let me help. He does the accent and stuff. He's like, let me help you. We recycle. So is it organic? Is it perishable? Is it aluminum? Right. Is it paper?
Yeah, and he's just like, oh, it's perishable. And he's like, oh, well, we can just compost that. And he's like, no, it's not really compostable. And so he's like, okay. So Charlie gets really agitated and Paco's just like, all right, I'm gonna open up this garbage. And he opens up the garbage and he's like, okay. And so Charlie puts a head in there, and then Paco's like, I'll just, you know, take care of it later.
And he's like, nope. And he dives back in and he takes it out.
Yeah.
And now he's got the heads as a problem again, which is how he ends up back in his room when the maid tries to come in. He says, no clean, no clean, no clean.
Right.
Gives her $20 and pushes her out. Then he shuts the door, puts a chair under the handle, which is used several times in this film, and I don't get it. Then he opens the window, climbs out it, breaking the gutter.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes to meet his practically father-in-law in the lobby.
Right.
And he meets the both of them. He meets Lori and the father, and they get margaritas. And I think that the fact that they're having margaritas, being pissed off at the mom who's a drunk,
mm-hmm.
is ironic.
Yeah.
It's not very supportive.
I mean, yeah. Oh, and at some point, oh, the dad references that he's now going to become a head shrinker, and he spits margarita all over the dad. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, like a shrink. And he's like, oh, right, right, right. You weren't talking about the heads
right.
that I have, obviously. That.
And then at some point, we cut back to the interrogation scene, and Joe Pesci fires a gun because, like, okay, so David Spade and the other guy, Steve, they're on the phone trying to, like, find where their friend is.
They're calling all the contacts.
Yeah, they're calling mom and everything. And that was kind of what was, like, I mean, the guy goes to Mexico, but he doesn't tell his mom how he can get a hold. In 1997, mm-hmm. like, wouldn't you at least be like, this is my location?
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't do that. And David Spade gets snarky with Joe Pesci. And then Joe Pesci fires a gun. And I mean, like, there must be nobody else in the house, but wouldn't neighbors hear that? Especially in a place as ritzy as, like, a place worth a fraternity?
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, 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 mm-hmm. no.
But it's because he made a joke about, he was reading the sleight of hand, sleight of mind,
yeah.
of the book that Miracle Whip wrote, and Spade is like, it's a pun. And first of all, I don't know.
Yeah,
I know it's sleight of hand, sleight of mind. It's a detective novel, but like in terms of like puns, it doesn't feel pretty. It doesn't feel very strong to me.
Yeah, and then but it's enough to make Joe Pesci's character get angry. It's like the last guy who told me a pun, I killed him. Or something like that.
Yeah. It's a weird hill to die on, Pesci. I don't get it, but it means puns are off limits, which is probably why Jen has been packing them in here.
Yeah. I've got a good head count on how many I want to say.
Woohoo!
Cleaning staff mix-up!
Cleaning staff just walks into his room. The chair is not a barrier at all.
Which I think is kind of, it says more about Charlie than it does about the staff.
And the lady turns to the other maid. So it's two maids. And she mm-hmm. goes, and he said to me, he insisted that we clean in here. And then he gave me $20.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like,
He said that it wasn't. He said, no clean, as in like, yeah.
She kept saying that the room was not clean. And then he gave me $20. And I'm like, what is the word no in Spanish?
No.
Yeah. And I don't know what the word clean is in Spanish.
Well, they come into his room ready to do the clean. And he says no clean, gives them money and pushes them out. So like I know there are a lot of cultural differences. And if a Mexican American or someone who is from Mexican culture wants to go ahead and correct me on this, I think that it would be fair to interpret that he doesn't want them to clean the room.
It would have been super stinking reasonable to assume he didn't want them to clean the room.
Mm-hmm. But if that wasn't the case, we wouldn't have the scene with the laundry room.
Yeah, which is about to happen. But first of all, Dick is talking to his wife, I think, and he's all like, come on, could you have really seen it? You know, those pills make you woozy. And I was like, woozy is not delusional.
Right.
There's a big difference between those two things. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he would dismiss her just because of that is...
It's gaslighting.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say.
Right. He does go ahead and entertain the idea, and they go into Charlie's room, and they don't see anything.
Yeah. Why don't they see anything?
Because his laundry was already taken, and that's why we had to have the mix-up.
Why does everyone think these... I mean, come on. We all remember from that Tom Hanks movie, a head weighs 8 to 10 pounds.
Tom Hanks?
No.
It was Pay It Forward? The one with the kid who knows everything?
I thought it was Jerry Maguire. Jonathan Lipnicki.
Oh, yeah. That's Tom Cruise.
Didn't I not say Tom Cruise?
Tom Hanks.
I might have said Tom Hanks.
Yeah. I mean, of...
You know how they look exactly the same?
Sean right now is saying, Naomi!
Love my name being said like a curse word. Okay, so here's the thing. 10 pounds is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so like...
If you have 8 of them.
Okay, so assume they're about 10 pounds a piece, right?
Well, yeah.
You've got 8 of them. That's 80 pounds worth of head.
Mm-hmm. That is not an unnoticeable amount of weight.
You just pick a it up and take it out? Like, I mean, it looks like a laundry hamper size amount of stuff, right? But like, you would instantly know that that's not what it is by density.
Right.
And then they deliver it to a blind maid who's doing laundry, and a person who's blind
is still going to be able to feel a human head.
They're ultra sensitive. The people that I've met or seen on TV and whatever, they are ultra sensitive with their fingertips. And so like, you'd pick it up and you'd be like, oh, this seems like a heavy pair of dungarees. Or maybe you'd be like, oh, this is a solid fleshy mass.
Well, okay, so anybody who has actually interacted with a blind person on a regular basis, when you see them like pick and hold stuff, mm-hmm. It's not even just that their senses are heightened; it's also how they've maneuvered their hands around it. Mm-hmm. So as soon as they pick something up, they're feeling around to see or to like see with their hands,
yeah,
get a feel for it.
Yes.
So she would have to know.
We assume she's proficient at laundry because she looks like she's great at her job.
Yeah. So like,
how did the head end up in the dryer, unnamed maid lady?
I know we're not supposed to take this movie seriously.
I know, but that's where the science breaks down for us.
They I mean, there's certainly some liberties taken with how the internal culture of the stars of the main characters relate to everybody outside of their inner circle. Like there's some commentary about how they treat the disabled and how they treat. So yeah, just the inner circle, how they interact with people that aren't within their inner circle. So people with a handicap. Do you say handicap or disabled? Do you choose?
I grew up in an era where I used both terms. So like not that I don't want to change, but like, as opposed to like things like, I like to use the term neurodivergent, mm-hmm. or neurodiverse is even better. I don't have a good word when somebody has a missing sense, like vision or hearing or the ability to walk or something like that. Like it, so I'm used to saying handicapped or disabled.
Yeah. But there is like a comment about someone's neurodivergence or learning disability, or I'm not sure if they actually use the R word, but it's something related to that. I don't remember. But it's just conversation, like somebody's yeah. talking about somebody else.
And I do want to bring up one point about the cleaning lady. So she's already taken one head out. Mm-hmm. Charlie has the other heads in a bag. Mm-hmm. And he sees the eighth head in a dryer. And so he goes,
just not thwomping around. We've all put a shoe in the dryer. We know how it sounds.
Yeah. I still find it hard to believe if a head got into a, never mind, we're not supposed to take it seriously, but he goes for the head in the dryer. And so he opens it up and he's trying to get the head, but then the cleaning lady, he has mimicked like that he's leaving. So she thinks she is supposedly thinking she's all alone. But Charlie goes in, he opens up the dryer. So the dryer obviously stops. The lady hears it. And then she goes and closes the dryer before he can get the head. Happens a second time. And then the third time, but after the second time, she grabs a chair, sticks it in front of the dryer and just sits down. Like either this woman thinks that it's a ghost or she's getting messed with. And she's like, I'm going to make sure that I'm not getting messed with again.
I think, yeah, I don't think she thinks she's being messed with. I think that she does what we all do when we are given broken to do our jobs. Mm-hmm. Like she's just like, fine. If you're going to open and not dry the clothes, I'm going to make sure you stay closed.
Yeah.
And like, I think he goes to try to open it a third time and she like slams it with her hand.
Yeah.
So he's like, well, can't have that. Right. I would be like, it's so easy to be like, oh, sorry, my shoe's in there and I have to get it out. You know how shoes clonk around.
Yeah.
I just got to get that out of there before it gets ruined. And she'd like, or just talk really fast. She doesn't speak English. Talk really fast and like, just do the thing. And then she'll be like, you know, left unknowing, but you'll have had the head. It's not like she's going to see you take it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just make an excuse. Get it done. I mean, you're already trying to take advantage of a blind person. Just follow through.
Correct. So what do you think? Hey, Naomi, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, I wish you would.
If you had a bag, uh-huh. and you didn't realize how heavy it was,
yeah,
and it looked very similar to another bag that you had,
uh-huh.
and you opened it up and suddenly there were eight heads in that bag,
uh-huh.
what would you do?
I would call the cops.
I'd like to think that I would call the police no matter where I was at. And I would try and get it figured out. There's a small, small part of me that thinks, you know, if I just throw this, if I just weight it with some rocks and throw it into the nearby ocean, it may not come back and haunt me. There's a part of me that's like, I might just toss it. I might just toss it. Mm-hmm. Tell you what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to go out into the desert with my headlights blaring and dig a hole.
You're not going to just go bury it in the desert?
No, I would probably put it into the water because then it that way it washes off my fingerprints.
But what if you did choose to bury it in the desert and a gang shows up and...
I would probably just drop everything and run away and be like, yeah, it's your problem now, guys. You get the deadheads. It's your problem.
The gang shows up and then the cops show up.
Mm-hmm.
The odds, the absolute odds of this happening, just it's astronomical.
Right.
And then they're getting dropped off by the cop and he almost leaves the bag in the car. The cop's like, oh, you almost forgot your bag. He's like, oh.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? The gang members steal the red Jeep.
Yes, of course they do. And the cop fires guns at he's like, hey, go get my car. And the cop just fires guns at it and is like, well, that's all I can do. Just like takes them back to the hotel.
Yeah. This is nighttime, by the way.
Yeah. And then Lori is like, you know what we should just do?
Ship them FedEx.
So I all the way recoiled when that happened. When she said that word of maybe a place I might have been employed at, I have this problem. I'm like, oh, I can't avoid it. Like, I'll be sitting in the car and I'll look up in traffic and then I'm just behind a FedEx truck.
This is, and because of that is why we will never do Castaway.
You know, that Tom Cruise film, Castaway.
You know what made me cringe was when she was like, we're going to ship these heads to your buddies back east. And I was like, my knowledge of the way that FedEx and privatized parcel delivery works is at some point that's going to get scanned and probably X-rayed.
If it's out of the country, for sure. Everything goes through customs.
But they're in Mexico.
Yes.
So it would go back into the United States.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is where they make a dig at the Special Olympics.
Oh, that's what I was thinking of. That's the second word, I think.
The word special?
No, just the special. Yeah, referring to somebody as belonging in the Special Olympics.
I totally missed that. And I watched this movie twice.
Well, I noticed it because it's a particular thing, because I love the Special Olympics.
Yeah.
But I've also had to check myself. I'll say, oh, I'm just being special right now. And I'll be like, oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
That's like being like, it's like when people make jokes about the short bus.
Yeah.
So, and like, I notice these things that I have said wrong in the past. And so, like, I'm trying to be better about them. But to see somebody just, like, blatantly say this in the film, and it's not, it's just a quick little jab. But I'm like, what if I was a person who I only ever was on, like, one of Abe's sports teams, and it was a bowling, an integrated bowling team. And I was the worst of all of us, by the way. But I felt real weird. I feel weird enough to have noticed it. But if I was somebody who participated greatly in those kinds of activities like Abraham does, I'd be like, the f***?
Mm-hmm. Well, and we, in my family growing up, we always had this joke because my dad actually did own a short bus. So when we would make the joke, you know, we don't ride on the short, you know, it was something along the effect of, we don't ride on the short bus, we own the short bus.
Uh-huh.
And it was like a dig at ourselves, but still in a way that dehumanized people who, who have disabilities, who are neurodiverse. I love that term.
Yeah.
It's a great one. I'm going to use it from now on.
Feel free. I used to use the words struggle bus a lot.
Yeah.
And I now recognize that as pretty gross.
Yeah.
We're getting better. And this was how many decades ago?
Yeah.
And that doesn't excuse it, but it does put it into a different perspective.
And we are here to shine a light on that perspective, because the more you know, the less you're racist and ignorant.
And ableist.
Yeah. And sexist.
We try.
Yeah. So Lori wants to ship the heads, but they still got one missing. Oh, the reason. OK, so They have one missing. Lori's like, we're going to ship it to Steve. And Charlie's like, what? Steve's just going to open up a box and he has a head? And she's like, no, we'll tell him about it. And so they call Steve, who is still in the frat house with Ernie and Joe Pesci. And that's when Charlie and Joe Pesci reconnect.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. He's talking on the phone. And Paco is like watering plants, I think. And like Charlie is like talking to Joe Pesci and Paco's overhearing. So it's another one of those instances where, you know, the staff of the hotel are like overhearing like really weird things.
Yeah.
And like earlier with the with Lori finding out the heads, at one point they're like putting the sword back up on the wall that the mom has taken off. And, you know, it's little things like that that really make me think, wow, in this one area, there's all these like little things that kind of tie back around. Like the reason why Paco was fixing the storm drain was because Charlie had broken it.
Mm-hmm.
And when the mom opens up the window in Charlie's room, all she sees is a head in the window, and it's Paco's head because he's fixing the storm drain.
Yeah.
There's little moments like that that is like, okay, they know how to write the planting and the payoff.
Yeah.
But that's like they put more effort into the writing of the planting and payoff than they did into like making the realism of like what you would do with the heads. Like,
yeah, I like to think that all of the supporting cast of the cast of especially the service people at the hotel, I like to think that there should have been an aside where they're like, what is up with all this white people nonsense?
Mm-hmm.
And then that would like give them an excuse, like they've seen it all because white people are insane.
Right. But still, it's like, why are you going to say that, you know, how realistic is it to just go ahead and ship ahead? Like the logistics of that do not work even in 1997.
Yep.
Like, I mean,
okay, this is the thing. It happens again. Like there's a knock on his door.
Mm-hmm.
The maid is like, your laundry.
Yeah.
And hands him a head in a plastic bag.
Mm-hmm. This is done after he has told Joe Pesci that he has lost a head.
Yeah. So Pesci's like, oh, I need to go get more heads.
Mm-hmm.
And like between, how did two maids three different times touch these heads and then like not notice it was a head?
Mm-hmm.
If I handed you a cabbage and told you these are my pants that need to be laundered, wouldn't you be like, this is real weird?
Yeah. Like, why are you going to ball up your laundry in this head-shaped form mass thing?
And now that it's been laundered, it's still a heavy,
yeah,
waterlogged,
yeah,
flesh in a dryer.
Yeah, again, like, I mean, if you're going to put a head in a washer and then a dryer, some shit's going to be falling off.
Yeah.
So it's like the realism of the staff interacting with these white people is in such contrast to the reality of the staff interacting with this dead head that it's like the two things do not make sense. Maybe if they were more in like a bubble and like, I don't know, like I think there would have been a way to kind of salvage that, but you would have had to have like put in some information at the beginning. And so, but again, we're not supposed to take it seriously.
I know. The movie
is called Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag.
Yeah.
It's like Man Baby.
It's a farce.
That was a couple episodes ago. Feel free to check out Man Baby, reviewed by Shocked and Applaud, directed by Terry. It's an inside joke.
That's not Terry from the flight
attendant from earlier. Not Terry J. Vaughn.
No, not Terry J. Vaughn.
Terry, who's actually Timmy, who's actually Tim, who actually directed Man Baby, who I hope becomes a loyal listener, applauders, but I will die of embarrassment for the rest of my life every time I think of that.
Yeah.
But we're in a place where Pesci now needs to find an extra head. So you know the solution? Right. Spade's got it.
Yeah, well, I mean, his first solution is he's going to off a guy. But then David Spade is like, look, we got a body farm just like literally across the street.
It's not a body farm.
It's not a traditional body farm, but it's like
cryonics is what they call it.
Cryonics, yeah.
Cryonics.
Yeah.
TM.
And so what's interesting about the cryonics is there are a lot of frozen heads, and they remind me of the heads in a jar from Futurama.
Heck yeah, yeah. That's really funny.
So
I like that. So he's like, hey, we've got a whole bunch of heads. We could go get them. We cut back to the resort, and the dad's like, I need my truck because we're going to get them back to San Francisco today.
They're getting back to San Diego.
San Diego.
That's where they're going to meet Joe Pesci. That's like the plan that they made.
Uh-huh.
And Charlie's like, hey, if you hurt my friends, you don't get these heads.
And right. He starts making demands on Pesci.
Right.
It's so funny. But then, oh, okay. So Paco walks up to Dick and he's all like, sir, I can't find your Jeep anywhere. And he's like, what do you mean you can't find it? It's big and it's red and it's a Jeep. And then Miracle Whip says, oh, that's right. We took it for a drive last night and your Jeep got stolen.
The dad is probably the most realistic person in this entire movie.
Yeah, I have a setup to hate him, but he makes a lot of sense.
He's like, how did you forget that the car got stolen?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I mean, he's been chill about his wife relapsing. He's been chill about her having a delusional freak out. He's been cool about, like, her, Lori's weird boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
He's been cool about, like, getting nothing that he wants done. All he really wants to do is go fishing, and that's not happening right now.
No.
And now his Jeep has been stolen, and he's just like, the hell? And, like, how are we supposed to get you back? And they're like, Paca's like, well, we have an airport right here.
Mm-hmm.
And he's all like, oh. And he's fine with it. He just wants the madness to stop. And you, this poor dad.
George Hamilton.
George Hamilton.
Mm-hmm. I looked him up on IMDb just to see what he's been in.
He's the dad in everything, right?
Yeah, he's yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jerk dad.
He is in a movie from 1981 called Zorro the Gay Blade. Just thought I would mention
I like that.
That. Yeah,
that's great. You know, it's a segue is into my next note. Enter random statue in headbag. I don't think those two men are wrestling. It's a statue of these two guys who are wrestling. But like,
you think it's homoerotic?
I mean, it feels a little homoerotic. But Lori's like, hey, you should put this in your bag. You know, the one that has all the heads in it.
Yeah, it's for my dad. It's for his birthday. I don't want him to see it and ruin the surprise. I'm like, there are other issues, Lori.
Yeah,
there are other issues. Why?
But he likes things that are macho.
I only like the word macho when it's associated with Johnny Bravo.
We go back to
Cryonics.
They're checking out the heads, but then they also go to it looks like a morgue
for sure.
Yeah.
But before they do that, Steve decides to pick a fight with Pesci.
Oh, yeah. Steve is having this, like, Steve is the guy who had the gun on him at the very beginning. So he's already tense.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, why are we doing this? Meanwhile,
he's starting to lose his grip.
Right. And it's what's nice about it is it's a very slow progression on how he, like, freaks out at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
But David Spade's character, he's just fine with it. This is nothing.
Yeah. Yep.
It's just another Tuesday.
Yeah. They go through the airport and Dick's bag gets put through the x-ray. They find two heads in it.
Okay. So the reason, Dick grabs one of Charlie's carry-ons and Charlie had to put two heads into the carry-on.
Because he had to fit the statue.
Right. And the reason why there are two is because he didn't have like the recovered head at this time. And then as he's packing everything, that's when the maids come in and bring recovered head. Yeah. So that's why he stuffs it into the carry-on. And then Dick's just like, I'll take it. And so he takes the bag.
Yeah. You go check the large luggage. I've got this stuff.
We
got
to get going.
Yeah. Then he gets nabbed by the police.
The bag goes through. It's obviously getting x-rayed. But then another bag comes through and the police are focused on that second one. But it's not until Dick goes and tries to get the bag out.
I couldn't tell what they were looking at in the second bag.
It was like they were arguing. Is it like a hairdryer? Is it like a gun or something? But it looked like it could have very easily been a gun.
So they see the heads and everyone starts screaming. Everyone is hysterical. And I know I keep thinking the word hysterical and the Greek word for uterus or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I hate the word hysterical, but like everybody's screaming, just screaming. The mom's throwing herself on the ground, like grabbing her daughter, throwing herself on the ground. And like the dad is like fighting the police, like,
right.
And he like throws himself against the glass and it just doesn't. That's not how I would just be like, it's not me. Obviously not me. I have no like there. You'd have to have like motivation or have left like evidence and like you'd just be easily exonerated. Like you have no connection to this.
Right.
Anyways. I do note that while Pesci forces Steve to cut the heads off of some bodies in the morgue, Spade smiles like half the time. And then they do a side by side of Spade and Pesci. and they have the same smile. And I was like, oh, Spade is a baby Pesci in this. And that's where my next theory came in that turned out to be wrong.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, he could easily go into this field of work. He has the same biting, mean spirit as Pesci's character. So like they should become like cohorts.
Right. I was getting like, you know, David Spade's character is just like, you know, Joe Pesci's character vibes. But I also noted that Steve was getting bullied into doing a lot of this work because he gets bullied into sawing off a head because they're trying to figure out who they got and everything. And they end up only getting four heads. And then there's this like weird exchange between David Spade and Joe Pesci about like, oh, we got a So-So Saul or, you know, we got a Hugo and da 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 da.
That happens after this.
Okay. Yeah.
But we do cut to the table in the restaurant at the hotel, and Nana's there. She's smoking a cigarette, like a Virginia Slim, it looks like. And the lawyer, Lori, introduces Dad's Mexican lawyer.
Right, which feels racist.
Well, then he's got a super heavy accent, which, you know, I'm not mad at. But then he says, in your country, I can't do the accent. I feel bad doing it. He goes, in your country, you have what they call the good news and the bad news. And I'm like, I know it's probably a more common turn of phrase here, but like, would you say it like that? Because I wouldn't.
No, we, no, I wouldn't. I like, look, we got the good news. Look, I can give you the good news or the bad news.
Right. You wouldn't like, yeah. The way he phrases it seems a little particular, but then he goes, this is actually pretty clever. He goes, so your dad, the good news is that your dad was only tortured a little bit. Everybody screams, right? And then he goes, well, the bad news is that they found him guilty and he's being put to death.
Yeah.
And they freak out again. And he's like, but this is Mexico. We can work something out. Something like that. He's like, don't you worry. You just relax.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Keep a level head.
And I don't know the exact exchange, but this is where Nana says my favorite thing in the entire film.
Yeah.
Which is what she calls a dong a dilly whacker.
Yeah. Oh, because they were talking about how he got tortured. And she was like, torture. With a little cast oil down the throat. Maybe you get your dilly whacker electrocuted. And at this point, I was like, because we got all of these other mob people, is Nana a mobster as well? I was getting like, she was going to be over.
Yeah, she was going to matriarch her way and like just solve all the problems. And right. I felt like that was going to happen.
I really wanted that to happen.
Me too.
Yeah.
Your Crafter's Courtyard coworker, Debbie, used to say tallywhacker.
Did she really?
Yeah.
God bless Deborah. She was fun.
So I think we cut back to the conversation between Joe Pesci and David Spade about the different kind of heads that they have. And they only really have four.
Yeah. Pesci is like, says to Spade, he's like, hey, because Spade's getting super solicitously helpful. And he's like, no matter how helpful you get, I'm still going to have to kill you. Right.
Right. And then at some point, Joe Pesci says that he's not going to take one of the heads because it doesn't really look like anybody. And that's when Steve has this freak out about like, I worked so hard on this head and now you're not going to use it. And my note on this one was like, Steve's monologue is very much like an artist not getting the time of day for their project. Like, how many times did this script get rejected?
My note is Steve is mouthy. He's just mouthy. But also when Spade and Pesci are listing all of the heads in this part, I was like, this is dumb.
It felt like they were trying to do a Whose Line on First gag.
Yeah, but it didn't land very well.
Well, yeah.
Oh, they get a phone call from Big Sal. Slap? Big Sep.
Yeah, head guys get a phone call from Big Sep.
He's like, I paid $80,000 for 8 hits. And I'm like, $10,000 for 8 hits? For a hit. It's like, sounds like a good deal. But it
in
might
1997.
Be 97, yeah. Right? Like, I wouldn't kill somebody for less than $20,000.
Good to know.
For anyone who is listening to this after Naomi has been accused of homicide,
it was a farce.
The views of Shocked and Applaud do not reflect the podcast hosts. Yeah.
So they use the courtesy phone at the airport, and he's yelling. And Pesci's yelling. And that's when like bystanders are noticing, and Spade is just like, he's talking about potheads.
Yeah.
We're in a recovery program, or like we run a recovery program.
Yeah.
It's pretty,
I mean, it's a solid land as far as the delivery goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Missed opportunity to reference Deadheads though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Grateful Dead people were.
Mm-hmm. Maybe, yeah, for sure. The mom wakes up and is like up and moving now.
Right. I think at one point the head guys see a broadcast of the dad getting carried away.
Yes. So they know, and they broadcast the name of the city, so they know to go there.
And because of the fact that Big Sep is on their ass for the fact that they haven't already delivered it. Uh-huh. Because like Big Sep specifically says, hey, I trust Tommy. I don't trust you. Because, you know, Tommy is like, you know, just the courier in this.
Yeah, he's a professional.
Yeah, but he's a professional.
He's been doing it for years.
Yeah.
3 days away from retirement.
Essentially.
We'll return next week for part 3 of our review of 1997's Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.